If you're wondering how to navigate government or grow your business or even secure funding for your nonprofit, then this is the podcast for you. Here on Lobbying Insider, we take a look at the intersection between business and government and show how things actually get done. I'm your host, Zach Fink, Director of External Affairs at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron. Welcome to the program. And we are joined by Omar Usmani from Aon Nexus, and the product he has, which I think is really innovative and worth discussing in detail, is Justice Nexus. Omar, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Tell me, I guess, first of all, where this all came about and what the idea here is to do. In other words, there's a lot of bureaucracy when you're dealing with the criminal justice system. That doesn't really benefit anybody. There are some reforms that were taking place in states all across the country and including here in New York, which I want to get into at some point. But it sounds like if this were put into a comprehensive system that was a little bit better, there would be less of a need for some of these reforms. And I'm wondering if you can talk to that a little bit.
Right. So Justice Nexus is a modernization of the justice system. So we're a legal case management solution built on the Microsoft platform, CJIS compliant, HIPAA compliant, FedRAMP compliant. We're a culmination of work that happens for police, for prosecutors, for public defenders, for departments of justice. Think of it as where everyone talks about reform and reform becomes a big fight. No one fights about modernizing the tools that prosecutors and public defenders are using. So we're the ones who are coming in and making life better for the people who are having to do the work.
And how does that work? Does it make it so that things don't fall through the cracks? Does it make it more efficient? I mean, just if a layman was coming in to try and understand how this would improve the system and make it better.
Well, we've all seen the lawyers going across the street with their big file boxes. They're carrying these file boxes back and forth. Imagine if that file box gets hit by a car, lost, something happens to it, right? That record, that case is gone. We're at least taking it into the 20th century by making an electronic case management system, right? And then we take that one step further by saying, okay, no, we're a fully modern, browser capable, you've got your full caseload secure on your phone in the middle of court. So the concept is it's an electronic case management. It's a digital case system. So our legal case management system is, think of it as CRM for attorneys and prosecutors and public defenders that are talking about case management in the courtroom or outside the courtroom, handling digital evidence, handling documents. It's a full management system for everything you're talking about. Rather than talking about paper and pen and paper in the courtroom, we're talking about having a computer that has all of your case records, all of your victim records, all of your suspect defendant information all at your fingertips. You get to see everything that's related to the case that you're working on.
Now, I've certainly heard of my share, not a ton, but of warehouse fires, quote unquote, in New York, where files just disappear and then they're gone. This would basically prevent that. This would make a permanent digital file.
Well, think of it this way. Where all of our case records are stored in government community cloud. These are government community servers. So Microsoft has their data centers that are fully hardened, redundant. So there's one in Arizona, one in Virginia. We swap data back and forth between these two locations. It's all in the cloud, meaning if there's a flood, a fire, a natural disaster, nothing happens to your data. It's immutable, it's there, it's secure. It's only accessible by US citizens. There's an onus on Microsoft to make sure that they are securing the data. So we're providing that service along with a great partner to agencies all across the country.
Let's identify the problem. When prosecutors are trying to bring cases, and I know there's been reforms to try and improve efficiencies, make things better, what are some of the biggest trappings that we fall into? In other words, do files get put on ice for too long? Are they not done efficiently? Do things get lost? What would you identify as kind of the biggest issue in terms of carrying through prosecutions the way they should be carried through?
Well, the biggest issue that we're handling is a misappropriation of time, right? Time is valuable to everyone. Time is extremely valuable in the justice system because we're paying for a suspect defendant to be sitting in jail while they're waiting for their day in court. We're paying for the attorney's time to review records or read through documents that can be easily searchable if there was an electronic system. We're paying for, our taxpayers are paying for all of that extra overtime that goes into reviewing videos, right? So if that video was indexed, translated, transcribed, it's efficiencies. So the biggest problem that we're dealing with is in the efficiencies, we don't have the tools to make good decisions today.
And a lot of it's being done by hand. People are transcribing, right? I mean, these are all things that could be modernized and done more efficiently.
Yeah, well, the concept of manual labor in the justice system is something that we want to eliminate. We want these brilliant people doing more decision management and less busy work is the point. Our caseworkers, our paralegals should be helping to make decisions rather than doing gopher work, right? They're not going for this, going for that. We want them really to do more with their time. And a lot of the concepts we talk about are they're being forced to do more with less. And at our company, we say we'd really like to help you do better with less. And it's less frustration, less time, less cost.
Give me some success stories, some places where this has been applied that has actually improved the system, made it more efficient.
Well we've got a couple of really cool stories. City of Seattle just went live with Justice Nexus in the past couple of months. And they're seeing efficiencies not just in their processing time, but from a case intake. Let's just say a case comes in, a referral comes in from the police department. The time from that referral to the time they have a case filed with the court used to be hours, right? Now they can review a case in minutes, right? So when we take days to hours, hours to minutes, you're creating more time for them to have conversations with the victims, to have those victim impact statements, to have real communication about the justice system. So Seattle's a great example for us. Another great example is the city of Los Angeles, where we are implementing, for the first time, race-blind filing. So race-blind filing is the idea that we are removing the bias in when an attorney reviews a police report for the first time, removing all connotations of race, removing their first name and last name that are identifying information, so that they can have a first pass at what the details of the crime are and make a charging decision before they see the race of the individual. This was a law that was passed in California, and we are implementing that using Justice Nexus.
And in terms of race blind, that seems to me like something that would generate great interest here in New York State, for example. How much has that bias affected the system in a negative way? Has it led to prosecutions that shouldn't be? Has it led to dropping of charges that shouldn't be based on something like race? I mean, I know there's an inherent bias that's very hard to put your finger on,
right?
But presumably if you take that out of the mix, that would be a better way to go about doing it.
Well, the best way for me to put it is we're not in a position to criticize a prosecutor about the decisions that they've made in the past. This is about a go forward. Now, there is no doubt that there was any bias in their case in the first place, right? So if you have nothing to hide, right, you'd be 100% transparent about the process. I think that's what the focus is. It's not a measure of going and criticizing what was done in the past or even improving it. It's now there is undeniable truth behind race-blind filing that there is no bias in the justice system when it comes to charging. So there would be proponents on both sides that would say, I either like race-blind filing because it's and now immutable that I'm not biased in my decision. And there's people on the other side that say, well, wait a second, I liked it better when I could say that there was bias in the system. So truth is truth. If we focus on those elements, I think you'll lead to a better outcome.
Right, and certainly you don't want to criticize anybody, but I also think it's fair to acknowledge that human beings are flawed,
yes,
that there are biases within the systems, that has been the sort of push and pull with criminal justice and reform for decades, which is that people feel as though there are instances where human beings judge other human beings using criteria they should not. So this, in effect, would take that out of it.
It takes it out of the equation. So justice is then just the facts, right? We can say we're dealing with the facts of the case, not with the details of the individual until after you made a filing decision. What's great about the process in California and specifically for Los Angeles is after the prosecutors made their filing decision, they get a second chance now to review the unredacted version of the police report. And if that changes their decision in any way, meaning they've identified it as a hate crime, for instance, hate crimes are obviously not part of AB 2778 in California, where they're not subject to race-blind filing because obviously a hate crime would be part of part and parcel with understanding the race of the individuals that are involved. So there are nuances to this, but we're creating the ability where there's facts that can be measured as part of the process.
And when prosecutions take too long, that can often lead to things being dropped, details being overlooked, right? I mean, the longer something goes, the worse it is for everybody involved.
And justice delayed is justice denied. We talk about this often, but you have to follow the money. right? Who profits when justice is delayed? It's usually people with the deepest pockets, right, in the justice system. They're the ones who want the delays to happen. They want the system to be long and arduous, where they're going to be able to wait out some of their processes.
And that would be, in this case, attorneys who are getting paid or...
Attorneys that are being paid or defendants that want their case to sit there for years, right? So
right.
It's different when you talk about some of the folks who are sitting on Rikers longer than they should. I'm talking about civil suits or criminal cases where you can extend time forever and just, you know, waste time and money from the taxpayer.
Who has been most eager, I guess, to embrace these kinds of reforms that you're bringing? I mean, have you dealt with prosecutors primarily, police officers, and is it also public defenders and people who want to see the same exact thing?
Well, it's fascinating. City of Tucson, Arizona, great little city. They came to us and they said, well, we want both our public defender and our prosecutor on the same system. They wanted parity. They wanted an equal playing field. They wanted to have fantastic systems in place. So we're implementing the same Justice Nexus solution for both of them, separate in two different environments for them, where they can share data. And when they said that they would come to the table and sit together and talk to us, we got excited ourselves at our company. And we said, well, we'll pony up some of the money for your implementation because you're doing something that no one else in the country is doing. We were fascinated. Here's a great example of both prosecutors and public defenders benefiting from having a modern case management system. It's protecting our constitutional rights. And if you talk to any prosecutor, any public defender, when they start talking about the law, they're passionate about practicing law and delivering justice, right? So obviously they're opposing sides, but they both believe in our justice system.
So New York State, after many, many years, took a real hard look at its criminal justice system, and it overturned or modified laws that had been on the books for, in some cases, 100 years. They kind of did this all at once, and sure enough, there were some problems. You know, you have this in Albany a lot where you're legislating for 20 million people in a diverse state like New York. But when you do things quickly, you know, very often problems that are unanticipated come up. So, for example, discovery laws. There's been a lot of issues with discovery. They've had to go back and fix it a couple of times because what was happening is you're giving time limits on evidence and when it can be turned over. And then when you don't fall within those time limits, then the evidence gets dropped and the case therefore gets dropped. So is this a way to improve that? I mean, it almost feels like they went forward with these reforms without having the technology to be able to really do them or implement them.
Well, when we talk about policy, we talk about people, and we talk about programming. You've got better and better policy every year out of Albany. You've got great people. We've known
that's
that.
That's debatable, but yeah.
We've got great people in the You're justice right. system, right? Our attorneys and
Well-meaning, without a doubt.
Yeah. Everyone is well-intentioned, but they're great people, right?
Right.
But we don't have great programming. We don't have great programs to actually help them, right? So I'll give you an example of really good discovery. City of Seattle, like we talked about before, they're getting the police report and all of the discovery for the case, right? All the information that they're requiring for charging when they make their charging decision. So they've got discovery handed over to opposing counsel, to whether it's a public defender or a private attorney, as soon as they've made the charges. So at arraignment, they've already got all their information in front of them because they have the software and the solutions to do that. What did that take? That took us having the attorneys connected directly with the police departments. So I think that's what New York is missing in some cases, where there's some disconnections between the police and the prosecutors, where they're not able to share information as quickly as they are, or should be.
And technology, you're saying, would make that difference. In other words, it would be just as appealing, presumably, to the defense attorneys, to the defendants themselves, as it would be to the prosecutors and the police. I mean, this presumably would be an area of mutual agreement, is that efficiency is going to make it better for everybody.
Modernizing your systems, everybody wins. Everyone wins. The taxpayers win the most because you're seeing really good use of their funds. The people who are in the justice system, they get justice served timely, right? So it's faster for them. Prosecutors get to do better with less. The defense gets to see all the information when they need to see the information. Last thing I want is a court case thrown out because discovery wasn't followed. You can follow a couple of fantastic cases. The Alec Baldwin case, that was a fantastic piece of law where the defense really said, you didn't follow your own discovery procedures, and that was dismissed.
Right.
And that attorney is brilliant for doing it. But if they had Justice Nexus there, it wouldn't have been the outcome. It would have gone to trial.
So a lot of these things wind up getting tossed or not fully prosecuted the way that they should be to the fullest extent of the law because of gaps in human judgment.
Gaps in, and I think that the human judgment part is it's always going to be, that's always going to be relative, right? So it's gaps in knowledge, right? And mm-hmm. it's gaps in information. Paper can be lost, right? But if the electronic trace, if your record is there, if your database has all the information, if you have it on your finger, at your fingertips, anywhere you want to be, it can be shared, it can be secured, and it's not burnable, is the best way for me to put it.
Right. And tell me about technology just in terms of artificial intelligence. We hear a lot about AI, how that's going to fit into all of this, and how big of a future does that have in something like organizing these types of systems?
We're already using AI, right? In the past, it was called machine learning. Think of it this way. AI and the conscionable use of AI in justice is fantastic when it, not in the decision-making, not in suggesting charges, not in any of the human decision, that human judgment that we really require in justice. It's in the busy work.
Those are still made, right? Those are still better made by people who can evaluate the case, have a moral compass, right?
Okay. There has to be a moral compass in justice.
Yeah.
AI and the use of AI in law is for the busy work. It's for the transcription of a four-hour video. I don't want to pay an attorney thousands of dollars, right, to go through and transcribe a video to look for one word that was an inflammatory statement. I can have a machine do that for us, transcribe all the information, and then make it searchable. I don't want the redaction of documents. I don't want my attorney sitting redacting every document with a victim name and then accidentally missing one because it was misspelled somewhere in the document. I want the tools like AI to go and do those things for us so that the attorneys can be, their time can be spent making decisions rather than the busy work.
And how much of this is done by hand? I mean, it does seem like a lot of it is that busy work that you're talking about.
Today, in offices where there are mostly paper files, it's all done by hand. It is and it's unfortunate because when you're going to school now, when you go in law school, you're learning on you're learning about electronic discovery records. You're learning about these great digital evidence management systems. You're learning about all these fantastic things, and you've seen them used in the private sector. And you end up in an attorney's office. Whether it be a district attorney, a city attorney, and you see that they're still using pen and paper, even the carbon copy paper to make triplicates of certain documents. And it's disheartening to these kids that are coming out of law school and going in and joining the justice system.
Yeah, no, it makes absolute sense. So tell me, I guess, how did you get turned on to all this? What did you see and what made you actually think about, you know, designing a system that would kind of clean up these efficiencies? Where did you start with all of it?
25 years ago, we founded Aon Nexus to do case management. We were mostly working with the federal government, doing case management on the federal level. And soon we saw really good ways to improve three places in the world, right? Education, healthcare, and justice. We looked at education and said there's a lot of places where education can be improved upon, but there's too much money to be made in not improving it. Same thing happens with medicine. You see that every day of the week. Healthcare is a very divisive topic. And we saw justice as a place where it doesn't matter if you're a conservative or a progressive politician, you know that modernizing justice helps your constituents. And it became a bipartisan issue for us where we said, we're going to help justice because no one will stand in the way. Is the best way for me to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are standing in the way, it's obvious what their intentions are. They're either benefiting somehow with the inefficiencies, they're benefiting by the justice system not being modern and efficient, or they have some sort of ill intent when it comes to justice.
Right.
So the detractors are far fewer when it comes to the justice system. And we said, hey, this is a great place for us to leave an indelible mark on society. This is really good, honest work. And partnering with Microsoft on this was a feat into itself. They are consistently adding new features and tools to their platform, and we leverage that to make sure we're secure, that we're compliant. They're adding new tools like AI on a constant basis. So we use Microsoft Azure Video Indexer to index videos. So not just transcribing or translating video, but looking at the sentiment analysis. So was this person happy when they made the statement? Were they under duress when they made the statement? You can see some of the inferences of that. really cool stuff for us.
And constantly evolving. I mean, I would imagine the original prototype you had is probably much improved from 25 or 20 years ago, right?
Our solution is evergreen. In fact, a couple of years ago, we replatformed, made it completely a new system. And since then, it's been an evergreen product with quarterly updates to the software. We're now, there is no version other than it's constantly updated.
Got it. Okay. All right. So it the basic, what you had there has been improved over time based on modernization, but not necessarily the product itself. In other words, the product was pretty much figured out all those years ago.
We're adding new tools and new features to the software on a monthly basis. Just added a process for bait stamping that bait stamps thousands of pages of documents in seconds. And it's a no suspense situation for the attorneys now, because they're looking at it as, I've got a document that I need to serve over. I need to have this bait stamped to have it submitted. And rather than me having to open up another piece of software and go and bait stamp it, they instead just select the document, select bait stamp, and it's done. It's less work for them, but the outcome is the same. What we wanted to understand is we're doing far better with less time and frustration for our users.
And in terms of New York State, we touched on the reforms a little bit. Tell me, I guess, if you see opportunity here, if there's something that maybe lawmakers either have a blind spot about, or something could actually be improved with a system like yours that would actually enhance some of the reforms that they are seeking. Because again, a lot of those reforms are very well intentioned, and they're trying to make it a more fair and equitable justice system for all. The problem is, when you make dramatic changes to something that's so big and comprehensive, it's hard to get it exactly right.
I think that there are case management systems in New York. They're a little bit older, is the best way for me to put it, and I'll be as polite as possible when I say.
Don't be, you're good.
Having older systems makes them insecure, right? So for me, protecting someone's identity, if they're a victim, if they're a witness, that's paramount, right? So we need to start with some ideas that reform requires us to have the tools to make those reforms. So just because you wave your magic wand and you say, I want justice to be fair, we have to set up the dominoes to make that happen, right? And the first domino is obviously the policy, and the second is the people. But without that third, big domino, which is technology or tools, your reform is only as good as the law that the paper that the law is written on, right?
Right.
So it's for me, it's fascinating because they're not talking about the tools that are required to make some of these things happen.
And getting the bias out of the system, you're saying that can also be partially, at least, achieved. You never really get bias entirely out of a system. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say, but technology that you're talking about can really go a long way towards doing that.
Right. And I think that the first step to that technology and the bias you're talking about is having transparency in your process. So if I could look to see what the process is, and then the data proves itself out, I can have analytics about what charges stuck. If we threw the book at everybody, right? Are we really getting things done? What diversion programs are working? What's reducing recidivism? What's improving the quality of life of people in New York State? And I think that's the aim of the policymakers, and we want to support them with tools that are readily available. There are some entrenched technology solutions in place in New York State that maybe need to be analyzed, and we need to look to see if we can improve upon the tools that we already have here.
And certainly for people who may be victims of crime, efficiencies is something that you would absolutely want to see. But let's talk for a minute about the accused, okay? Let's say you're rightly or even wrongly accused of something. It's probably right now, from my understanding, it's 12 to 18 months with felonies before they even go to trial. I mean, if you're innocent and being accused of something, that seems grossly unfair, especially if you're incarcerated during that period of time. And even if you have committed a crime, it seems like it's better for everybody to have that solved within a lot shorter time frame than 12 to 18 months.
Well, speedy trial is something that, some of these cases they're not allowed to have speedy trial, so they get delayed by a huge, huge factor. I think of the innocent people that are charged with crimes, and then look at it. The taxpayer is paying for them to sit in jail. The taxpayer is paying for the attorneys to review these items. This individual isn't at home helping feed their family. They are out of out of society in jail, where if they weren't a criminal before, now they're in jail and they're being indoctrinated into gangs while they're in jail. So for me, the belief has always been there's got to be a better way. And policymakers have the right intentions. It's not just jail everybody. It's the idea of we want to jail the guilty and the innocent. We want to make sure that we give them their fair trial. And I think that 12 to 18 months sitting at Rikers is not a good idea for anyone.
No, and certainly not somebody who is not equipped or ever been in jail before and may have not committed any crime at all, right? I mean, that seems like a really difficult place to put somebody.
I like to believe that our justice system is well-intentioned to the point that no one wants to put an innocent person in jail, mm-hmm. right? But we hear horror stories in the justice system across the country. And the transparency... You just can't do wrong if all the data is right there in front of you.
Right. And in terms of the reforms that you've seen, just from looking at Albany and looking at New York, are there places where that can be improved and you can have fewer problems than they've had in terms of the implementation?
100%. I think that the concepts of modernizing, you get reform built in, right? So reform is a dirty word. It's a partisan word nowadays, right? So when you talk about justice reform, everyone, you know, they talk about bail reform, they talk about discovery reform. There are sides to that argument.
Well, they assume that it's ideological, to your point, right? And I don't know that it is. I mean, I think, again, the intention is not necessarily, even if it comes from progressives.
Agreed. And you'll have proponents and antagonists on both sides of the aisle whenever we talk about justice reform, but no one criticizes modernizing the system. Mm-hmm. But at least you have the data that can prove one way or the other who's right or wrong, right? So I think Albany is doing a fantastic job at having the discussions. I think that you have some leaders that have some real technology in their resumes now that are sitting in Albany, and they can talk about the use of data, use of analytics. It's the people that I'm talking to in Albany, they're some of the most brilliant politicians I've met in the country, and they're well-intentioned. They want to make improvements, and I think you're going to start seeing that shortly. I think that it's a really good process for us to say, hey, look, what we've done in the past, I'm not calling it bad, but it can be improved upon, and why don't we look towards the future, right? And the future has to have better technology, better tools, less frustration, and more transparency.
And we are pretty much out of time, but just real quickly, the initial feedback you've gotten has been positive?
It's always been positive. But remember, New York, like you said, this is a big ship. Turning a big ship is always difficult. And I trust the leaders that we have to make the right decisions, which is a scary thing, right? It's a scary thing to trust them. But everyone is well-intentioned. And I think that modernizing justice should be everyone's focus for the next cycle.
Okay. Omar Asmami, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Zach. It was a lot of fun.
The Lobbying Insider Podcast is a production of Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron, LLP, New York State's premier middle market law firm, practicing in more than 20 areas, including commercial litigation, economic development, real estate, and government affairs. The podcast is produced by Don Tesserero, and our platform manager is Monica Thomas. Be sure to subscribe, and you can get it where you get most podcasts, including Apple, Audible, Google, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Thanks for being with us.